special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? We are here live, full effect. I am your host, James Bell. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golan Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, it's 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and be able to talk live on the show. Have a few things here to talk about this week. You have the previous fights that went on this week, specifically on the Premier Boxing Champions card that was over in Toledo, Ohio. We're going to be looking over that particular fight card, and in the other segment here, we're going to preview what's on store for us next week in the next PBC feature. That'll be on Saturday, next Saturday. And then we get into the overtime session after 8:30. It will be a different segment, as we're going to go through a few news and notes over the sport of boxing. A couple of things that I want to point out here for a couple of notable fighters and a few things that are newsworthy here. So we're going to be going a little bit in depth on those particular things there. But first off, I wanted to, you know, start off with the card that happened over in the Huntington Center in Toledo, Ohio on Friday, February 10th, as we had two particular fights that were featured on that card there that was on Bounce TV. Was a hometown fight for Robert Easter Jr. against Luis Cruz, and you also had the WBA Super Bantamweight Championship or Super World Bantamweight Championship and the IBO World Bantamweight Championship on the line, as Rashay Warren went up against Zenad Zakianov. So first up, what we'll do is we'll look into that bantamweight title fight between Rashay Warren and Zenad Zakianov. Zakianov came as the top contender for one of Rashay Warren's titles. Came in there with a 26-1 record. Had a string of victories since losing early in his career back in 2008. He won the International Bantamweight Championship in 2015 and had an interim WBA World Bantamweight Championship win in the end of 2015, and after that he hadn't fought since. So he was going through a long layoff here before fighting Rashay Warren for the WBA Super World Bantamweight Championship and IBO Bantamweight Championship that Rashay Warren acquired you know, after getting that rematch win against Juan Carlos Baiano. You know, he lost the split decision to Baiano in 2015 over in Florida. That was a very close fight. And then they had a rematch on June 18th of last year over in Chicago, where he won a majority decision. So he was there, coming in there at 14 wins and just one loss. Of course, that one loss, Juan Carlos Baiano. And looked like Roshae Warren had a fairly good start to this fight against Sakianov. Round one, he was able to score two knockdowns against Zenad Sakianov, and it looked like he was going to basically get an easy win. It almost looked like he was on his way to an easy win there, but Sakianov was able to gather himself. He had a notable trainer there in this corner by the name of Ricky Hatton. Of course, there's only one Ricky Hatton. So Ricky Hatton there, the you know, guy that had a welterweight title belt, was one of the highly ranked light welterweight fighters out there back a few years ago before he faced Floyd Mayweather Jr. for the welterweight title belts. Ended up retiring soon after his fight with Manny Pacquiao. And now he's training fighters here, and one of the guys he's training was Zenad Sakianov. Sakianov, like I said, won an interim WBA belt to become the highest ranked contender for the WBA. Pretty much was behind the super champ there, Roshae Warren, and the regular champ, Jamie McDonald. So he got this shot against Roshae Warren. Suffered two knockdowns in the first round, but was able to respond from that. Looked to be the quote-unquote hungrier fighter, was the one that pursued Roshae Warren. Roshae Warren didn't do much of anything to keep the aggressiveness of Sakianov away from him, and Sakianov was, you know, able to get the upper hand later on in the fights there. And it was pretty much a, once it got to the scorecards after 12 rounds, it was a split decision. And you had, I think it was, you had a 115, I think it was 115-111 on for both sides there. One for Roshae Warren, one there for Sakianov, and I think the last scorecard was 116-110 for the winner. And now the new IBO and WBA bantamweight champion, Zenad Sakianov. So Sakianov moves to 27-1, and Roshae Warren ends up having the suffering the second loss of his career. To me, I feel like this is almost similar to the fight that Roshae Warren had against Juan Carlos Payano, the first one, because it looked like in the first one, Payano was pursuing him, pursuing Warren, basically resetting, trying to see if Warren could keep him at bay or get him off. Payano looked to be the hungrier fighter there in that first fight, and it seemed like Sakianov followed that same blueprint, especially within the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds. Looked like Warren didn't want to do much to keep Sakianov at bay, and kind of like allowed Sakianov to clinch him. And while you know, he was clinching. It looked like, you know, Warren was complaining to the referee instead of doing what he needed to do in order to get the upper hand in the fight. I mean, one thing you gotta do is you gotta make sure that you can get these guys, you know, off of you. And you, once you have somebody that's looking like he's going to pursue you and continues to pursue you, then you got to do something to get him off you. He didn't look like he wanted to use a jab. He didn't look like he wanted to use sideways movement or give like a good counter punch and then move out of the way in order to get Zakyanov off of him. So, you know, but that being said, that kind of makes him seem like he wasn't really, you know, hungry enough to defend the title that he just had. I mean, this was his first defense of these bantamweight titles that he had, and yet it looked like he was out there and he looked like he basically was just showing up just to be like, hey, you got to beat me. I'm the champ. You got to beat me. So you got to do to beat me. I don't have to do anything. You're going to have to do what you need to do in order to beat me. And Zakyanov, you know, after that first round, looked like he was doing what he needed to do in order to get the rounds against Rashay Warren. And so, you know, with that being said, Rashay Warren ends up losing another split decision when he could have went on out there and, you know, could have taken control of the fight and beaten Zakyanov. And so, you know, with this being, you know, his second loss of his career, and another thing about it that's kind of notable with Rashay Warren is that this is his, in the past five fights, he's actually had two losses, two wins, and one no contest. He had the no contest against Javier Gallo at the end of 2014. Then he rematched him in Las Vegas in 2015 and got a TKO win. Then got that title shot against Juan Carlos Fiano. Lost by split decision, won the rematch, and now in his first defense, he loses to Zanat Zakyanov by split decision. So that's something there that he has to. He'll probably exercise a rematch clause, but he looks like, you know, Rashay Warren has to do a lot more in order to get the win here against somebody that looks as hungry as his trainer was, you know, back in the days when Ricky Hatton was, you know, out there in the ring. All right, right now we got a caller in, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, JBZ? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Yeah, just a quick back in on Rashay Warren loss. Like I said, second loss, not the guy down. He got knocked down and things like that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis, the other promoters say that they would like to do a rematch, right? Did they say that?
Yeah, they were probably likely to do a rematch. I mean, this is like a, you know, a PBC card, but of course you have Zakyanov there as a, he came in as a number one contender for the WBA belt, so I think that was like a mandatory defense. So most likely there will be a rematch for, you know, those belts.
Yeah, one thing that we say all the time, a loss doesn't kill you. You know, it's so funny in this day and age, so many promoters protect their fighters and walking them up, soft competition coming up to get their title shot or even to secure a belt. Don't necessarily need to throw a name out right now. There's one person, heavyweight that we know about. That's likely has done that and everything, but
yeah.
a loss does not kill you, you know. But these promoters act like the loss gets you off network TV. I mean, I understand that if it's a bad loss, where you didn't train right, you didn't make weight, or you just got blew out of the water, I understand that. That's a bad loss, and that speaks a lot for you and your career going forward. But if it's not a bad loss, but like I said, it doesn't kill your career. So would Warren have these two losses? Like I said, loss doesn't kill your career, but two, and you just lost your first defense, that's not good. You know, I mean, and we've seen fighters come back with good results. We've seen fighters come back and that are never really the same again. Good example, Victor Ortiz. He was definitely up and on the rise. He took that first loss to Maidana, and with the and like we said, the way in which he lost, once he first quit, he said, "I don't want no more," you know. And that that point, that put a stigma upon his career going forward. It's funny because Ortiz was a bright star at one point. You know, just he's a great prospect. I'll leave it at that. He's a great prospect where a lot was going to be expected out of him. And like I said, that loss he took to Maidana, that changed his whole career going forward from and then going to the high performance in the Mayweather fight. Just kind of lost hopes at that point, you know, lost hopes. But Warren, two losses, if he gets a rematch, this dude needs to wake up and get it right. You know, you can't, actually, loss doesn't kill you, but you can't afford to have too many losses. You know, that's going to get you off network TV, PBC or whatever it is. It's going to get you off, and it's going to get you out of rankings or get you lower in rankings, so you lose your opportunity. So you got to capitalize on these things when you have them, especially your first offense. So I hope that he does get the rematch. I hope that he does. I hope that he learns from that as well, you know.
Yeah, and then I'm looking at, you know, a couple of these rankings out here, and I'm seeing here that, like, Zakianov isn't, like, regarded as a top 10 fighter in many of these ratings here. And Rashe Warren, I mean, I don't see him among the top guys for bantamweight other than, like, on Ring TV. They actually have the WBA regular bantamweight champion ranked over Rashe Warren and Jamie McDonald. So he's definitely going to have, you know, be taken down a few pegs by losing to a guy that is not within the top 10 in a lot of, you know, in a lot of rankings here. So he's going to have to turn around and respond with a much better performance than he did here against Zakianov, because Zakianov looked like he wanted to win the belt or wanted to be the champion, while it almost seemed like, you know, Rashe Warren wanted to coast after getting those first two knockdowns.
Yeah, well, once again, like I said, lessons learned. I'm sure at this point now he's had a chance to go back and just watch the fight with his team, watch the fight for himself, and realize the lost opportunity, you know. So, like I said, hope he gets better and learn from it, you know.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that, you know, Rashe Warren is one of the, I think he's one of the underlings for, you know, a guy that's going to have a main event here coming up on Saturday. And that guy was very involved in looking at that particular fight and seeing what the results of that fight was. And so I wonder how that's going to rub off with, you know, a particular guy in Adrian Broner, and, you know, how he's going to respond to what Rashe Warren did here in this fight. Because Broner, I think Broner actually was a promoter in this particular card. He had, like, a lot of, you know, his marketing materials across the venue for this particular card. So it's going to be interesting to see how Broner responds to what the performance of Rashe Warren is in that particular fight.
Yeah, it's actually it's going to be an interesting month for Ohio fighters. Warren, Broner coming up, and even this past weekend with Easter getting a win. So right now Ohio's on the map, and even just on that national perspective, Warren takes this loss, not quote unquote carrying the banner for the state of Ohio. So once again, that's disappointment to him, his fans, and especially locally. So So he's going to have plenty of time to let this soak in and hopefully get it right, like I said.
True. Now, there's somebody that, you know, did have a basically a hometown showing there. You had the main event of that particular fight card that was at the Huntington Center. And it's the IBF World Lightweight Championship was on the line as Robert Easter Jr. defended it against Luis Cruz. Robert Easter Jr. recently winning that IBF lightweight title in, you know, a very exciting back and forth fight between him and Richard Comey over in Reading, Pennsylvania in September, getting that win by split decision. And so he had a, you know, voluntary defense there against Luis Cruz. I mean, Luis Cruz was not even within the top 10 in the IBF. So it was just something that it was like a hometown fight, like a lot of these belt holders have sometimes when they recently win a belt. You know, they get a voluntary voluntary defense before fighting a higher rated contender. And so there was a lot of expectation there for Easter against Luis Cruz, and they were thinking that Robert Easter would blow away Luis Cruz. I mean, Cruz is somebody there that came in at 22-4. Didn't really, you know, beat anybody of, you know, anybody of merit. He lost against a, you know, Edna Cherry, who was a notable fighter, but that was, you know, almost 2 years ago, and that was a knockout loss. He had a split draw against Ivan Rekach back in April of 2016. So personally, I don't know how he was still, you know, in the IBF rankings by this time, you know, since having a fight. But he was able to get in there against Robert Easter Jr. Easter Jr. Seemed like he was going to blow away Luis Cruz, but not necessarily do that. I guess to my standards and to a lot of people's standards as well. Pretty much within the 6th, 7th, and 8th rounds, it looked like he had Luis Cruz in trouble, had him on the ropes, but seemed to crowd himself instead of taking his time, using his range, you know, staying at a good distance from him and Luis Cruz and not tying himself up or tying up his punches. So he wasn't able to really put Luis Cruz in that much trouble until the 10th round when he was able to, you know, score a good punch there to stun Luis Cruz and then end up knocking him down there. And Luis Cruz was able to get up from that. He was able to stay up in the 11th round and he got knocked down again in the 12th round, and it looked like Robert Easter thought that he had the knockout then, and Luis Cruz ended up getting up from that, and it went all the way through those 12 rounds, and Robert Easter Jr. scored the unanimous decision win over Luis Cruz to keep that IBF belt. A lot of people were looking towards Robert Easter having a good showing here and having him matched up with a lot of highly ranked guys within the lightweight division, such as Barthelemy and actually WBC champion Mikey Garcia. But it might seem like he's going to, you know, see if he'll end up having that mandatory defense against Denis Shabakov, which will be a very good fight between Easter and Shabakov before fighting Mikey Garcia. So, Terrell, what's your thoughts here about Robert Easter Jr. here in this particular fight and potential matchup against the mandatory there in Denis Shabakov?
Well, my first thought is I'm glad that once again another Ohioan had a fight, belt holder, and won this fight and keeps his belt. So I'm glad to hear about that for that brother right there. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have a fight, and whether it be a champion or not, or just a highly ranked fighter in the rankings or something like that, sometimes they'll take a fight, and sometimes unanticipated, but it's a rough fight. And we see that definitely every now and then, where the challenger just pulls some magic out of nowhere that his career, his body of work didn't suggest that he had that in him. Like I said, the guy that Eastern fought lost a knockout spot by Cherry, right? So, but I mean, sometimes it's like that. You know, it's like that sometimes. And you see that in sports sometimes where an underdog just has the number of the opponent. It's just like that sometimes, you know. So really, I'm not too concerned about Easter's performance in this fight. He got his belt. That's the number one thing right there for me. What I'm more interested is the movement in the lightweight division. Like I said, but for me, I think one of the telling things for Easter is to take that mandatory and to do well in that. You know, the lightweight division is really getting ready to light up. We already know one of my favorite at the end of the division is Mikey Garcia. We already know that. So we got him in place. We got some talk of Garcia fighting Lomachenko possibly later this year at 135. Yep. That's interesting. So, I mean, you know, some of the fights that we crave for are champions fighting champions, and that's regardless of weight class. That's what we want to see. So for me, that's why it's important that Easter got his win, kept his belt. Hopefully, he will get a fight that's mandatory and do well in that and retain his belt. I mean, that's a lot to look forward to. But that's my initial thought on it. So we can get some champions in line to face other champions. And, you know, because right now for me, the class of the division is I won't say Mikey Garcia, but he's also eyeing a fight. With what's the other kid's name? Spanish kid that's also a belt holder in lightweight.
Linares.
Yeah. So Mikey Garcia is iron fighting him, and I'm not gonna speak on that too much because that's gonna be a rough fight. As much as I love Garcia, but Linares is a rough and tough customer and also a belt holder as well.
Yep.
But I'm just admiring the movement in the lightweight division, and because you know with the lightweight division, we've had so many people rose from those ranks. To go on to 140, 147, and so on, you know. So it's always interesting to see 130, 135, who's going on, who's dominant. Because look at Crawford, for example. That's where he came from. Crawford, Pacquiao, Mayweather, the list goes on as far as people that came from the 130, 135 division. So like I said, it's very interesting. It's very interesting to see what's going on with these guys.
Yeah, it's a very, very good division there at lightweight when you have the likes of, you know, Mikey Garcia, Linares, Robert H. Jr., Terry Flanagan, you know, veteran Anthony Crolla, tough guy Richard Comey. You have Felix Verdejo there in that division too. So there's a lot of talent within the lightweight division. And, they still have, you know, Francis Bartholomew still sitting out there that doesn't necessarily, you know, have a division or a home yet. I mean, they haven't put him in at 140 or if he's still, you know, still there at 135 pounds. So there's a lot of good fights that could happen within the lightweight division right now before any of them, you know, considers moving up to 140.
And even Gamboa, has fallen a while, but to me, that speed is definitely a factor with the right matchup. That's a name to be reckoned with as well. You know, it's been fallen a while.
Hey, I mean, if Gamboa was still, if he was there with Top Rank, that would have been a good potential fight if they would have Gamboa there against the likes of a Felix Verdejo to see if Gamboa still has it or if Verdejo is ready to go to the next level. That would be a good matchup right there.
Certainly so. Speed would definitely be a factor in that. Wow. And even with Verdejo, we know his last fight, he didn't look good. And I'm glad his promoter recognized that and even made a statement about it. So you know what? He's not all the way back yet. We need to give him another fight or something like that in order to get him back to that top level where everyone was expecting him to be prior to the motorcycle accident. So I'm glad to hear that.
Right.
Instead of a promoter trying to get his fighter lined up for the money and taking a loss, taking damage. So I'm glad to see that.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. We are in the next half hour here. For those that are listening in on Go Long Media and you want to talk boxing, you could call in at 347-237-5539 to get on queue so you'll be able to talk boxing. All right, next year I'm just going to look forward to what's going to happen here on Saturday in Cincinnati, Ohio. You have, of course, you have the main event with Adrian Broner against a former sparring partner in Adrian Granados. And part of the undercard will be the WBA regular welterweight championship on the line as David Avanesyan defends the belt against Lamont Peterson. And you have Lamont Peterson there who hasn't, you know, been in the ring in a good while. He was over there at George Mason University over a year ago. And he was supposed to like have these different bouts in line for him, but they didn't come to fruition. So he's basically been on the shelf or hanging out at Headbangers Gym for over a year without a fight lined up for him. And so now here he is. This is basically his, his second fight in welterweight, because the Lamont Peterson fight against Felix Diaz was a majority decision win. That was at welterweight. But like I said, he hadn't had a fight since. So here he is going up against David Avanesyan for the WBO regular welterweight championship there. And, of course, the main event, Adrian Broner going up against Adrian Granados. And that fight was originally scheduled to be at the 140-pound division, but now it is at the welterweight division, or so to speak, which is kind of notable because I would say that would keep more people's eyes on Adrian Broner to see if he wasn't able to necessarily make that 140-pound weight limit that this fight was originally scheduled for. Real quick, Terrell, what you got on these two particular fights here?
Well, my first thought is on the Peterson fight. Now, first of all, whoever his promoter is, management, or whatever they got going on, I want to sign with them. Because, like I said, we talked about Peterson recently on the show for his seemingly disappearing act from boxing. It's like with all that's been going on, we virtually forgot about this guy. Also, he's coming back. He's back on the scene, and he's fighting for a title. I'm like, how the hell you get that?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well.
So I mean, I'm not sure if he even.
Yeah, I don't know how he got it either, man. I'm trying to see if this is still part of because it says Adrian Broner's part of it, but Ellerby. You know Ellerby. Ellerby hangs around in the Ellerby is from the D.C. area, so he kind of like keeps his ear out for, you know, those fighters in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
Like the Peterson brothers, so.
And just another note on that, they're fighting for what is the WBA regular title, and just it's kind of funny, all the way one division is spinning up their titles, super champion, champion in recess, regular title, interim title holder. It is so funny, man. It's so funny. I mean, I know it's all about the sanction fees, but it's still funny to see this going on, you know. But the other fight with the Broner fight, I think that you mentioned it before that it's going to be at 147, right?
Yep.
I mean, my main thought
is that now at 147 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us have said on the show that we all feel Broner's best work is at 140. His best prospects for holding the championship and possibly uniting everything, possibly, considering the fact that the Crawford's still there, is at 140. So here he is at 147. My initial thought is, well, okay, well, let's see. I mean, the thing about it, we know as we get older, our bodies tend to grow and stuff like that. I mean, that could be the case with him. I mean, he's short on the short side, but still south for the division. But we know that some of his previous work when he got to 147, that didn't translate and everything. So that's why we said that he belongs at 140. And we know it's probably too big to make 135. We know that. So, I'll wait and see. I want to see it. So I want to see some increased power, control, command, all that stuff. So that's what I want to see at 147 for him. That's where he wants to remain and compete at.
Yeah, it looks like it almost seems like that's the only thing that he could pretty much do. The last fight that he had, against Ashley Theophane on April 1st, he ended up being overweight for that, as that was supposed to be at the 140-pound division, and he ended up being, like I said, overweight, even though he had the super lightweight championship at the time. So the belt wasn't on the line for Broner. Like, he couldn't really, retain that. You know, the only thing was Theophane could win it if he was able to beat Broner. But, of course, he wasn't able to do that. So he had that, and then afterwards he had all of those legal troubles, back home and whatnot. Bowling issues, he couldn't beat somebody in bowling. So he kind of like took it to the streets, so to speak, and was able to get a settlement out of that. Now he's supposedly going through the same things that he's been going through in the past, saying that he's back, he's, focused and all types of things. And, we have like a running joke about Broner actually being focused in the ring or anywhere else. But that's not, that's not how Adrian Broner came to be who he was, by being somebody that's completely 100% into his craft. He's basically got there by his abilities and, his charisma outside of the ring. So if it wasn't for his charisma outside of the ring, who knows where he would be at this point. And so here against Adrian Granados, who, is of note because Granados was able to defeat a highly rated prospect in Amir Imam. But after that, he went up against somebody that had, how many consecutive losses? Six? Nah, a bunch of them, actually, as a matter of fact, about seven or eight. So after getting that big win against Amir Imam, Granados just went on ahead and fought somebody that was 12-15-2. And so you can't have, a fight against somebody with that type of record and then turn around and face an Adrian Broner over in Broner's hometown and have, that much success. I mean, yeah, they were, sparring partners and whatnot, but it's like, what can you learn from, these sparring sessions when you have a distinct speed disadvantage, so to speak? And now, with it being at welterweight, you probably have a power or weight disadvantage too, because you're not familiar with, you may not be as familiar with being at that welterweight, in comparison to, what Broner is. Broner has held a belt at welterweight before. So, I mean, we a lot of people aren't familiar with Granados being at the welterweight division. He's had a couple of fights at welterweight, but you know, even with that, the guys that he's faced are like nowhere near the level of who Adrian Broner has faced. I mean, actually, I'm looking here, and one of the fights that he had that was at welterweight was back in August of 2015 in Indiana against somebody that was 4-16-2. That's right, 4 wins, 16 losses, and 2 draws. And that was at welterweight.
Are you serious?
So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're going to the Box Rec Records, and he's there. Adrian Granados going up against somebody named Christian Steele, and that Christian Steele was 14-2. And this was like almost two years ago.
That's pathetic.
You know,
that's pathetic.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, he was able to, you know, he was able to upset Amir Imam 3 months later. So, I mean, I don't know. But still, I mean, like going up against that type of competition in comparison to who Adrian Broner has faced, you know, over the past, you know, six years or so. Actually, Broner has had a fairly extensive career. He's almost, he'll be in his ninth year as a professional. So, So that's like a whole different animal there in comparison to fighting who he's fighting here with Adrian Broner. So that's going to be something where I just don't see that Granados will have much of a chance in that particular fight. I mean, to me, the bigger news is that it is going to be at, you know, the welterweight limit, because now you really don't have much that, you know, Broner can do. It almost seems like he doesn't want to make that 140-pound limit. You know, even though, like you were saying, that's his best chance of having the most successes over there at the super lightweight. But I mean, he just doesn't look like he wants to make that, you know, make that weight limit.
Well, you know what? Just in consideration of Granados' work and stuff like that at 147, this fight is all about Broner. This is a showcase fight for him at 147. And you know full well that when you before going to a fight, your team sits down or who they looks at, as far as the landscape, where you at, what you've done, at what weight class you want to return that, things like that. And basically handpick an opponent. So they probably picked this guy on purpose. And like I said, this is a showcase fight for Broner at 147. Because, I mean, think about it. Where is the money at? 140 or 147? That's a very, very easy answer. Obviously, you want to get yourself in the position and showcase your fighter at that weight class to get into position to secure other fights for other people at that weight class. And really, despite Broner's antics, he has skills. He has skills. He's rash, stuff like that. I mean, I throw a question. What if Broner could do well? I mean, obviously he's going to win this fight. We know that. But what if Broner could put himself into position into like, the, for example, to be a top three in any of the weight classes at 147, if not a mandatory? Imagine Broner then. If he's truly focused, like he says he was, he's back. He's done all the antics, stuff outside thing that's forayed his path and things like that. And even I'm glad.
Yeah.
I think it was a couple months ago. Him and Mayweather had to sit down, and Mayweather is behind him again. So right now I'm gonna take the man for his word. He says he's done all that mess. I'm gonna take it for his word. So we'll see about it. So it would actually be great
we'll
for boxing if he could be good at 147. We'll be good.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all know that 147 is a money division, and we have that key fight coming up on March 4th with the unification match of Thurman and Garcia. And if Broner is able to throw his name into the hat, there in the 147-pound division, I mean, you could have something where he could get a big fight between one of those two for those belts, but he would have to stay there at 147 pounds, one, and then two, maybe fight, you know, somebody else at 147 pounds, even though, you know, nowadays it doesn't take that much for, you know, a guy to either move up to another weight class to get a title fight, as we saw with Kell Brook against Gennady Golovkin last year, going from welterweight to middleweight and getting a title shot there. There's also one. There's also like one other fight that's gonna be there next week. I think it's going to, since this. Yeah, this card is going to be on Showtime actually. So I think this this fight here will probably be on that telecast too. It'll probably be the first fight under that telecast. It's a light heavyweight fight between Marcus Brown and Thomas Williams Jr. Thomas Williams Jr.'s last fight was a kind of like, it was like a pretty good fight between him and Adonis Stevenson in June of 2016. You know, he was there. He was right there in front of Adonis Stevenson. He was taking a lot of the punches from Superman, but ended up getting chin checked once, went down, and then got back up, but couldn't withstand the onslaught of Adonis Stevenson again, and so he ended up losing that fight for that WBC light heavyweight title. And so this will be his first fight back from there, from that fight, going up against Marcus Brown, who is, you know, undefeated, coming from New York, has one of the minor titles there at light heavyweight. So think here, this is, I'm trying to see if they're floating around there. Like, Marcus Brown is under the top 10 for the WBC. So I think this one here is kind of to see if those guys could stay within the WBC rankings. Not sure if they're going to move up a little bit, because there's a few guys that are still out there. Like Sullivan Barrera is still there. Better Bia is still there. Joe Smith Jr. Still out there. Elder Alvarez is still there. And seems like they added a new entry there with former super middleweight title holder Badu Jack. Badu Jack is there ranked at number 4 in the WBC. So they have a, you know, fairly a good, you know, fairly good list of fighters there for the WBC rankings. You know.
And clear up one thing for me, a softness fight.
Yeah.
The one fight that's coming up with Butte and Alvarez, I believe. What weight is that at?
Butte and Alvarez. Hold on, because I have to see if that might be at is it Elena Alvarez actually?
Yeah.
That's gotta be at that's gotta be a light heavyweight. That's a light heavyweight.
Okay,
that's coming up
that.
In a couple of weeks. I wonder if there's a way that I'd be able to see that fight. Von Michel is, you know, promoting that fight. He's one of the guys that's under the promotes a lot of those guys. So. So that'll be one thing to look out for. That fight there in the light heavyweight division too. That'll kind of like shake things up in the WBC rankings as well. Especially if Lucian Butte is able to pull off the win against the undefeated Alvarez in that fight. We got like less than 10 minutes left here on the live show for the Boxing Source Radio Show. To call in to catch a little bit of the overtime portion of the show, dial in 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue. and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Couple of things here on the news front. One thing that I've seen here recently is that you have the, I think it's the cruiserweight champion here, the WBO cruiserweight champion, Oleksandr Usyk, says that he is making a decision to fire his main trainer, James Ali Bashir, and will be reunited with Anatoly Lomachenko. Anatoly is the father and trainer of WBO super featherweight champion Vasyl Lomachenko, and was the trainer for Oleksandr Usyk in the amateur ranks, where Usyk was, you know, very successful in that, you know, in the amateur ranks, being a lot of notable, fighters there. So, I think that's going to be a very, very key move for Oleksandr Usyk. He's already regarded as the best cruiserweight that's out there right now. So this move here is probably going to prepare him for more successful things here in the future. I think he's going to probably stay there within the cruiserweight ranks and probably get all of the belts that are available in that cruiserweight division there, while having Lomachenko as his trainer. So that's like one of the notable things that I wanted to touch on here, that I just, you know, that I was just getting here looking at boxing scene. So got any quick thoughts on that, Terrell?
Yeah, I mean, good for him and everything that he's doing with Lomachenko. Obviously, the guy can train. That's proven by what his son has already accomplished in the amateurs, Olympics, and the professional ranks. But in regards to the division, I was reading an article today about the David Haye versus Tony Bellew fight. And as we already know, Bellew's a champion at cruiserweight. And I know it was a bit of wishful thinking for them, for Hearn, the people that promote Bellew or whatever. They were saying that if somehow he can get a win against David Haye, he's going to be right in the mix for major fights at heavyweight, which I thought was laughable. I mean, you never even fought at heavyweight before. So you think one fight against a blowhard is going to put you right into the mix of things being a heavyweight. And so say, for example, Bellew does beat David Haye. Anything's possible, you know. But if that does happen, he would likely vacate his cruiserweight title. And then your guy that you just spoke of with the trainer, that would be significant for him, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, if Bellew loses the fight to David Haye, he's right back down to where he started from. Nothing lost other than lost on his record. That's it. And back down to cruiserweight for him. So, I mean, that's my initial thoughts on this guy's change of trainer with that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is that I don't see what the end game for Tony Bellew is with that fight against David Haye, especially with David Haye teaming up with Hearn, kind of, you know, in a sense. But to make that particular fight happen, I mean, after that, Bellew really doesn't have much that he could do in the heavyweight division. I mean, who is out there that he could fight that he would be able to kind of handle? I just don't see anybody that's out there where he would be able to adjust to, you know, make that type of transition to the heavyweight division and be, you know, anything close to being successful in that particular case. So, I mean, his best move is to, like, kind of stay at the cruiserweight division. That's his only you know, that's his only route of success at this point.
And basically, the article suggests the fact that he's not shot, nothing like that at all, but he's definitely towards the last leg of his career, so he wants to get the best fights, which translates into, I want to make the most money while I can. That's what that means, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's no one he could potentially match up with at heavyweight. And the offer also suggested the fact that, of course, if Joshua wins, he'd be right in the mix to fight him. And like I said, that would be laughable, you know, with that.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely laughable if that does happen. So I just don't see why,
you know, something would be lined up for Hayes to fight, you know, Joshua in any sense of the word. I don't see why that would be the case there. So, you know, one of the other things that I saw floating around is that, you know, now, I saw this, you know, around the Twitter ranks, is that Kell Brook is looking like he's making that decision to finally fight Errol Spence Jr. He's been waiting a long time. He's been holding out. He's been trying to push back purse bid after purse bid, making delays left and right. But now he says that he's ready to fight Errol Spence Jr. and defend his IBF welterweight title against his mandatory Errol Spence. To me, like I said, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, but it's something that a lot of us have been waiting for. You know what I mean? So we'll see if Brooke is able to weather the storm of Errol Spence Jr. I mean, we've talked about Errol Spence Jr. almost, you know, for a long time now as being the guy that's next in line as one of the most talented fighters in the sport of boxing, and that, you know, a lot of guys have been talking about, you know, fighting him or not fighting him. Of course, he had this little back and forth between Errol Spence, Keith Thurman, and Floyd Mayweather. And so, and now it seems like this is going to be his first shot at a major title.
Well, I tell you what, I'm definitely right in line with you. I will believe it when I see it. When the contract is signed, that's when I know it's going to happen. And even then, I'm going to have some reservation then. And, I mean, it's interesting because you took a dare, you took a gamble by going up to middleweight, or I think it was a catchweight, I believe it was, and fighting Golovkin. And you got your face broke. So if you would do that, why won't you fight Spence? I mean, I know it was a gamble for him to go up to fight Triple G and everything. And so it was all about taking a gamble and, of course, getting I think probably the best paid of his career, you know. But if you did that, why won't you fight Spence? Why won't you just sign it and get it done? I mean, first of all, you're the champion. It's going to be a 70-30 split in your favor, and the fight will be likely overseas. So that's in your favor as well. So bottom line, what it looks like is, like you said, scared. Scared. Are you really that scared of Spence? Are you really that scared of losing your belt? And like we said before, one loss does not kill your career. I mean, hell, Brooke went up to fought Triple G, got his first loss. Boy, he's still a player at 147.
Yeah.
Despite his loss
at
middleweight. So is he really that scared of Spence?
Yeah, I think so. Because going by what you said there, one loss doesn't kill your career. I mean, he took that risk to go up against Gennady Golovkin. And of course, what a lot of Brook fans and probably those close to Kell Brook would say is that was his biggest money fight. And so, you know, the risk was good enough to take, you know, with the reward. Here, if he was able to, if he fought Errol Spence before fighting the likes of a Golovkin or an Amir Khan or anything like that and ended up losing, then he loses whatever he has as value to him as a fighter. So it's not like he's very marketable, you know, internationally as a fighter himself with Kell Brook. So the most that he has is what he's able to do in England. So he was able to, you know, get that middleweight title fight in England there against Gennady Golovkin. The potential fight between him and Amir Khan didn't come to fruition over the past couple of years, even though a lot of people were demanding it. And so now he's finally getting this thing here against Errol Spence to see if he's able to prove himself against a guy that's very talented there across the ring. And so it's like you said, I'll believe it when I see it, when I see Kell Brook walking down that ring and stepping in that ring with that IBF belt with him over there across from him to see if he's there to actually, you know, actually fight, you know. So that's something that I'm, you know, waiting on seeing. One other thing that I kind of seen here is that looks like Manny Pacquiao is looking towards his next fight. And, you know, while we're talking about him fighting Jeff Horn, or as a lot of people confused it as, Joe Horn, who is a football player for the New Orleans Saints. But it's actually Jeff Horn there, who is the second-rated contender for the WBO welterweight title that Manny Pacquiao currently holds. Apparently, they were planning on having that fight in Australia, but that doesn't seem like it is the case. Looks like Manny Pacquiao was planning on trying to have in the United Arab Emirates instead of Australia, and that he posted on Twitter that he had a poll on there for fans to vote on who he should fight next. There it was: Amir Khan, Jeff Horn, Terrence Crawford, and Kell Brook. I kind of find that a little bit funny because it almost seems like he's following the blueprint of somebody else that did that, even though that didn't necessarily come to fruition, as, you know, Floyd Mayweather kind of like put up a poll for somebody, for the fans to vote on who he should fight next, and he ended up fighting Marcos Maidana. So ended up being a fairly successful pay-per-view event. There, but here with Manny Pacquiao, he has four options, and we all know that he won't fight one of those four options because he never has chosen to fight him, and that's Terrence Crawford, so that's not going to happen. But to have this on his Twitter page is kind of interesting, to say the least. There, but Terrell, what you got on that?
Yeah, this is. My first thought is, like, where are all the Pacquiao supporters, and what is their true feelings on him fighting this Horn kid? I mean, just look back at not too long ago when Mayweather made the decision to fight Berto and people like that. People were crucifying him for that, you know, crucifying Mayweather for fighting Berto. And now you're fighting this Horn kid out of Australia that virtually no one knows anything about, despite the fact that he's undefeated. And not only that, you're Pacquiao. You fought at the MGM and everywhere. And now you're searching for a venue, a location for a fight. This is what you're left with?
Yep.
Easy thing. If Pacquiao elected to fight Crawford right now or this year, that fight, that'd be a huge pay-per-view fight in Vegas. There'll be no need to search for a venue, place. People be calling him to sign that fight up, to host a fight. And now, simply because you made the decision to fight a virtual unknown, now you're searching for a venue. I mean, Pacquiao's been saying for years he's going to fight in the UAE. I don't think he ever has. And now he's reduced to this. And you've reduced to putting up a poll to say who should I fight next, we already know who everybody wants you to fight. Crawford. It's easy. That goes back 2-3 years
yep.
at this point. That it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to him, to his legacy, to his team, or whatever. And really, I think that the reason they picked this Horn kid, they probably thought they can go down there and make X amount of dollars. And that, unfortunately, that didn't happen. Because I think the way stuff is set up down there, I think the government has to get involved to help sponsor like a fight like that. Because that's what happened mm-hmm. with Parker down in New Zealand. The government has to get involved, put up money as well in order for big events for like to happen.
Yeah.
But for Pacquiao,
mm-hmm.
this is shameful. It's shameful for him to be Pacquiao that we know, that fought in all the major venues here stateside, and now you reduce to this. And the poll, embarrassing. Embarrassing.
Yeah, the thing here with Jeff Horn is that he's, you know, for the majority of his fights in, you know, either in Australia or New Zealand, and that's, like, not much different than, like you were saying there with the thing with Joseph Parker, because Jeff Horn was part of that undercard for the heavyweight title fight between Joseph Parker and Andy Ruiz Jr., with, you know, Ruiz Jr. being just signed with the Top Rank promotion. So I think Aaron was looking at, you know, that particular venue or that area is a potential site for Pacquiao's next fight. And if they did have those, you know, additional sanctions, or if you had to have additional permissions from the government in order to have a event of that magnitude over there, then that could have been a roadblock for Manny Pacquiao to fight Jeff Horn in those venues. And so now looks like he's kind of like searching elsewhere in order to, you know, get a fight made or to get a fight done. It looked like, you know, I'm not sure if they were trying to get a fight done to happen around, you know, the month of April, but now I think it's going to be, you know, either June or July for that fight to take place. Like looking here as to, you know, in this other article, it's saying that like Pacquiao's advisor Michael Kontz claims that it would take place in the United Arab Emirates with more details there. So it seemed like they were trying to have it in Brisbane over in April in the Suncorp Stadium, but now they're not necessarily certain as to that taking place. It seems like, you know, Pacquiao has his fans and his team pretty much confused as to what's happening right now.
Yeah, well, this is kind of what happens when you keep holding on. I mean, the thing about it with Pacquiao, if he would have retired at this point, I would not be mad at him, because we've got a whole body of work from this guy. I mean, despite
any
negative people stuff anybody can say about him, or he used enhanced stuff to move up the weight classes and stuff like that, I don't even care about that right now. If he had retired, with everything that he's done, I'm damn proud to say I was able to watch Manny Pacquiao, you know. So, but for now, when you're, in a sense, holding on, and yes, he can perform. You can perform, but you don't fight a Jeff Horn. You don't do that at this point in your career. That would be like, I mean, and even on that same note, even with the notion we joked about before of Mayweather fighting Conor McGregor, it's laughable. It's laughable. Because you cannot acquire that type of skill set in that short time frame. You can't do that. It's like a 12th grader finding a kindergartner. That's what it's almost like, you know. And in this Pacquiao fight, it's almost like a 12th grader fighting a 5th grader. You don't do that. You don't do that. And if it's just for a money grab, it makes it sad. And I don't know his finances. I don't know his management and stuff like that. But you just don't do that. You don't do the people like that. And when there's a prime fighter out there that can actually make you the money. And just for example, a Crawford-Pacquiao fight, I'm just going to just throw a number out there. Pacquiao, $10 million. Crawford, $5 million. And with pay-per-view shares to make their money go up after that, they can do that. They can do that right now, you know. And now you're out here searching for a venue and still anxious for public support for this fight, and it's a shame. It's bad for boxing, and especially for this caliber of fighter and for the body work that you've done, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And it seems like, you know, now here at this point, that Pacquiao is trying to cash out, and instead of like retiring, as you said, with his legacy intact, it seems like he's basically trying to cash out, and going against a guy like a Jeff Horn is kind of, to me, it's almost as bad as when he went up against Chris Algieri. Because, I mean, many people didn't, you know much about Chris Algieri, and when, you know, they found out, like, his previous fight he had, you know, what kind of a semi-controversial decision win, then it's like, why in the world is Pacquiao facing Chris Algieri? And I think that's basically, you know, that looked like a cash grab in that sense. So here, if it seems like Pacquiao is still going to be going forward with a fight against Jeff Horn, is going to look like a lose-lose situation in all fronts for him. Let's see here. Like one more thing on the news front. It seems like the promoter for the WBO heavyweight champion Joseph Parker is looking towards trying to get a unification bout done, or preferring to get a unification bout done between Parker and Anthony Joshua, if Joshua beats Vladimir Klitschko on April 29th instead of the potential fight between Parker and WBC champion Deontay Wilder. You have, it seems like they say that Parker's promoter said that win over Huey Fury, which is the mandatory challenger for Joseph Parker on April 1st, would open up doors for Parker to have fights there in the UK. The promoter of Joseph Parker says that Joseph's stock would go through the roof in England, and so he says it would make more sense for him to target English opportunities next if he's able to get the win over Huey Fury. For example, if Joshua did beat Vladimir Klitschko, that would be a better unification because, you know, Parker's stocks would be high, and they would head down the UK route at the at that time frame. He says that he thinks that Wilder will happen, but it's probably a bit further down the track, but not too far away. So it seems like he's trying to go the route of the more lucrative and more notable fight against Anthony Joshua. If Joshua picks up the win against Vladimir Klitschko, because, I mean, right now, that Joshua Klitschko fight is probably, I mean, it's the most talked about heavyweight fight, and has been ever since that announcement was formally made after Joshua's previous win over Eric Molina. So right now, it seems like Joshua is the proverbial cash cow of the heavyweight division, and that everybody seems to want to go after him instead of Deontay Wilder, with the exception of maybe Luis Ortiz. So I don't, you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if Joseph Parker tries to, you know, go for that fight there if he's able to get the win over Yuri Fury. But something tells me that there may be another heavyweight contender that may return by that time that Joseph Parker wants to get that opportunity against Anthony Joshua. And I think that contender will be in attendance on April 1st for that fight between him and Huey Fury. And you might have an idea of who that person is there, Terrell.
Yeah, I have a vague idea of the person that may be in attendance that fight. He might be a cousin of the other fighter. I'm sure that's who you mentioned of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but aside from that, what's interesting about this Parker's team's assertion that they will likely seek an opportunity with Joshua in the event that he wins. And like I said, with that mandate being made, it looks like Joshua is a cash cow of the heavyweight division. And he is, what, 18-0? And our buddy Wilder Quacker Duck is what you want to call him, is what, 36-0, whatever he is. I'll say this. It seemed like so long ago, when there was a heavyweight fight, everybody watched the heavyweight fight. And that's coming from the late 90s and definitely through all the 2000s. When there was a heavyweight fight, everybody watched the heavyweight fight. And that's when we had quite a few names, American names, that were at the top of the division in terms of heavyweights. And here we got our own heavyweight belt holder, WBC, I believe it is, limited opposition and limited profile. And one thing that you've always asserted, Joshua has done so much more in a smaller time frame than Wilder has done in almost twice the fights. And that's embarrassing. And also now, like we just talked about now, Parker is the one, I'm sorry, not Joshua, I'm sorry, is the one that's being looked at as the cash cow. All roads go through him. And it's sad. Because like I said, back in the day, when there was a heavyweight fight, everybody watched it. And, man, Wilder, you got to get up out of Alabama. You got to fight these names. You got to get to Vegas, New York, or wherever, mainly Vegas. That's where heavyweights fight at. That's where it goes down at. That's where that exposure is at. People travel to Vegas and support the fight, support the event. But in order to do that, you got to fight somebody. You got to fight somebody. And it was just a couple months ago when after Parker first got that title and everything, the Wilder's team looked at him, well, we can probably match up with him. Well, they're not looking at you right now. All roads don't go through you. They're going through Joshua. And here you are fighting the Gerald Washingtons of the world and people like that. You know, it's very disappointing. And I wish my man Mike Gray was on the show right now so we can talk about it.
I wish he was on the show too, because it's like I told him, you know, a couple of days ago, I would not be surprised at all if the next fight that Deontay Wilder has is against Dominic Brazil. Not against Luis Ortiz, not against Kubrat Pulev, not against the winner of, because there could be a potential fight between Dillon White and Bermond Stavern later on this year that would determine who the mandatory contender is, but I don't even think that he would fight either one of those guys. I think he would have his next fight against Dominic Brazil as his next defense there. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was the case.
Yeah, and this is interesting that you mentioned Ortiz's name, because he has so many different options available to him right now. We discussed briefly earlier this week that Ortiz might fight Big Baby Miller. That's not going to happen. And mainly on the Ortiz side, it's not that he doesn't want to fight him, it's that he has to properly consider his options going forward to make himself get in order to get that title shot as fast as possible, you know. So
mm-hmm. yep. He's trying to look at his best options there at WBC, WBA, and IBF. So.
Yeah, in the dream world.
That's something that he wants to take advantage of.
Yeah, in the dream world, when Wilder's opponent dropped out, and before he signed to fight with Gerald guy, a dream world, and we know when it happened. If he could have fought Ortiz this month, that'd have been great. That'd have been great. That'd have been ballsy, ballsy, everything, all that stuff, you know. But that's a hypothetical dream fight. So at this point, we know what's going to happen for a number of reasons.
Yeah, a very distant dream fight, it looks like here. But, I mean, it's just something that we're kind of, like, looking towards here. I mean, Ortiz has made the moves to try to get into the WBC rankings. And, I mean, right now, it seems like he's put there at number two in the WBC rankings. And we've been talking about Wilder's comments in reference to him saying that these guys have to be in the clean boxing program. But, I mean, here we are, and Luis Ortiz is there at number two. He's a recent addition to the WBC ranking. So if he's in there, he's got to be, you know, kind of like signed up in the clean boxing program or whatever this voluntary thing is that the WBC and VEDA came up with. So to me, it almost seems like another distant excuse by Deontay Wilder. I'm just calling it as I see it.
Yeah, just at the same time, it's a business, and these guys are here to make money, prize fighting, and that's what their managers are doing, getting them fights to keep them money coming in and keep them safe. And that's all we're seeing. We can stop opposition. So they keep making these fights, and it's network money, whatever. That's all they're doing. That's all they're doing. Goes back to even with Danny Garcia fighting, what's that kid's name? Sokka, I think what it was. That came out.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And this is all this is. Because I think even prior to that fight, Garcia's father even made the statement, hey, this is a business. We're here to make money. And sadly, that's what we're seeing from Wilder and other people, too. So.
Yep. That's what it is. That's what it is. All right. On that note, I'm going to close out this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I look forward to the next one on the 19th as we go over that fight between Adrian Broner and Adrian Granados and see if Lamont Peterson is able to have success against David Amnesian for that WBO regular welterweight championship. For those on the Go Long Media Network, be sure to catch the sister shows on here with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. That's on every Tuesday night. And also the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show that's on every Wednesday night. And the new additions that we have on the Go Long Media channel, To the Half of Matthew Long, is a daily 30-minute podcast. So be sure to get those as well and catch us on the social media channels on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just look up The Boxing Source. Like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Peace.